Good evening, church. I can't even begin to tell you what an honor it is to be among such great men. You have heard some fantastic lessons from very dedicated, very motivated, very courageous men. And I feel myself an honor to stand among these men, to be considered one of them. I consider myself kind of like the John Raccoon Smith of the Restoration Movement. He was surrounded by very educated, very intelligent, well-spoken men. And I, like him, I never went to Bible college. I never took any high school courses that taught me how to teach or speak or anything like that. God simply gave me a big mouth, so I guess that's why I'm here. But I am honored to be here. I also want to thank the Valley Church. Gentlemen over here running all the equipment, all the work that went into this place, did an outstanding job. And every time you see one of them, thank them. Thank the kitchen crew, thank the guys over here on the side. They are doing such a phenomenal job. I also want to thank Robert. He was saying that I think that David Boswell was one of the very first ones to sign up for the lessons and everything like that. And as soon as I got the lessons, I very selfishly took this one. And then as I took this one, I realized, this might have been a mistake. It's a great subject. The subject matter that we're doing right now is called We Believe, Therefore We Speak. We do believe. We've got a God to believe in. We've got a book to believe in Him through. He is an amazing God, and He has given us all the tools that we need in order to do this. And it's just like a young man that maybe had just gotten married for the first time, or a young couple that have their first baby and they're very proud of it. They want everyone to know. We need to believe that much. We need to shout it from the very tops of the mountains. And I was very honored and very quick to take this lesson. It's about do whatever you have to do. And it's based out of 1 Corinthians 9, verses 22 and 23. But then I got studying it, and I read the very first line. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 22 starts off with, "To the weak I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I might share with them in the blessings." I struggled with the weak part of this. Even though it's a very minor part of it and really doesn't have anything to do with the message, I struggled with the weak part of it. I was very honored to be able to sit in Lauren's classes. And Lauren is the last thing from being weak. Lauren is very courageous. In his entire life, through his Army career, his military career, I think it was Army, wasn't it? Okay. Military career, through his dedication of what he does now in mission trips in Thailand. Anybody that can speak Greek to the Thai, I am amazed at. That is not weak. So I struggle with this weak. I struggle with the weak. I have other heroes I've got other heroes like Larry Smith that I look up to. His strength and dedication, I was honored to be able to serve with him, not as an elder, but as a minister, and they allowed us to come into the elders' meetings and to see his dedication, his strength, and his wanting to know the truth and to project the truth and to be able to shepherd a flock onto all truth. I'm sorry, but that takes nothing in the weak category at all. And like my brother, Mike Shiro, love that man. I've grown very close to him over the last years. And the reason I have is because I wanted to be alongside somebody that's very strong. He's very dedicated. He knows what has to be said. He studies diligently to get it done, and he's not afraid to say it. We believe, therefore we speak. But what does this weak mean? How do I become weak? How might I win the weak? When I first glanced at this verse, I kind of struggled with it, and the fact that, well, does it mean, well, I'll be honest with you, I came from a Pentecostal background. And one of the things that they try to do is that they try to manipulate the truth. They try to gloss it over, to bend it to where maybe more people will listen to it. And they do things like instrumental music and so that maybe it'll draw more crowds, and it's okay. It's doing a good thing. And maybe, well, you know, you don't have to be baptized. You don't have to go through the trouble of getting wet or anything. Just say this prayer. And some people look at that as, this is how I'm going to be weak so I can identify with people and so that they can understand and so on and so forth. Well, they're right. They're weak in the weakest sense because they're not standing up for the truth. I firmly believe that we need to do and be willing to go to any extent needed to get the truth out. Paul was very willing not to bend the truth. He stood up for the truth. And we should do exactly the same thing. We are not to cloud it, we're not to mask it, distort it in any way, shape, or form. We cannot try to look more like the world in order to win the world. It's not going to work. Paul in Galatians chapter 1 and verse 10 says, Am I now seeking the favor of men or of God? Or am I striving to please men? If I were still trying to please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. We are not here to please men. Paul, in this statement, was not talking about being weak in this sense. Maybe it's weak faith. Maybe it's weak in health. Maybe it's weak in spirit. Well, I think we've got an idea somewhat, because back in chapter 8 and verse 13 of 1 Corinthians, it says, therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never eat meat, lest I make my brother stumble. He was concerned about his brother. He was concerned about maybe that he's not strong enough. He's a little bit weak in the faith and can't handle it, and therefore, I am not going to put any cause of stumbling for him. Weak people? Well, yeah, it's people. It's not animals, it's not plants, it's not global warming, it's people. We are vulnerable. What people? All people. Non-Christians, Christians, even strong people have weaknesses. So, what is this weak? I want to invite you to turn to Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2 and verses 1 through 8. This is an example of Christ. And they don't call it weakness. They call it humility. So if there is any encouragement in Christ, any comfort from love, any participation in the Spirit, any affliction and a sympathy, complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, being of the full accord and of one mind. Do nothing out of revelry or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you not look not only at his own interest, but also to the interest of others. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped. He made himself nothing, taking on the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, and being found in human form, humbled himself to become obedient to the point of death, even death on the cross. Jesus had an attitude of humility. Jesus had an attitude of service. Jesus had an attitude of whatever it takes. Not to bend or distort the gospel or the message, but being real, by being honest. No ulterior motives, real feelings, real compassion, real concern for a lost soul. I want to give you an example of this. In Matthew chapter 9, this is a story about Jesus, and I don't like calling them stories. These are historical facts. There's nothing story, you know, there's no fictitious thing about it or anything. It is true stories. And here's Matthew. It says, as Jesus reclined at the table in the house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and were reclining with Jesus and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, why does the teacher eat with the tax collectors and sinners? But when he heard this, he said, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I came not to call the righteous, but sinners. Sometimes we look at this one and we go, okay, well, it has to do with with Jesus and his teachings. Yep, you're right. Jesus was comfortable where he was at. He was reclining. He was relaxing. The sinners came and reclined there with Jesus and obviously at ease with his company because they were reclining together, enjoying each other's company. I would have loved to have been in that room right there just to hear what Jesus had to say to them. And those that were dressed in self-righteous religion were there also. And they were talking behind Jesus' back and asking sarcastic questions to his disciples. But Jesus heard them. Is it supernatural hearing? I don't know. Does he just know their hearts? Probably. But he said to those, he made a statement that got their attention. Probably had nothing to do with anything else. And he says, those who are well have no need for a physician, but those who are sick, they need a physician. And I can only imagine they're going, huh? Where'd this come from? But the one thing that I think we fail to realize is that Jesus was concerned about them too. He said in 1 Timothy 2 that he says that he all desires that all men come to know the truth. And so as he was sitting with the people and the sinners and the tax collectors there, and these Pharisees were making their snide comments, he approached them and says, you go and learn what this means. He was concerned for them. He wasn't leaving them out either. He was concerned for their souls. So we look at whatever it takes. Jesus was doing this. Whatever it takes. Later on in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 33, it says, just as I try to please everyone in everything that I do, not seeking my own advantage, but that many, they may be saved. Well, this is that humility thing. This is that reaching out to the weak in a way that they would understand. I want to tell you a story about another hero of mine. Due to my lovely bride, Mariana, over here, before we got married, well, I'm surprised she wanted to do anything with me. I asked her out on a date, and she said in a way to try to get rid of me, says, you got to go to church with me if you want to go on a date with me. Haven't missed a whole lot of sessions since. But she was concerned about my soul. And she invited Ken Smith in the latter part of July to come and study with me. Sat down with the Jewel Miller tapes. Not the slides, later than that. But we sat down with the Jewel Miller tapes and we proceeded to watch them, and I was amazed by the very first question that Ken asked me. In fact, I almost said, "How dare you?" He goes, "Dave, you saved?" Right on. I'm right there. Okay. He didn't bash me. He didn't say, "No, you're not." He didn't say anything like that. He just says, "Okay." And we proceeded. It was about the fourth video. And I sat in that room and I was crying like a baby. I was emotional because, first of all, I was upset that I was living all this time and I thought that I was going to heaven. The other thing was, I was angry. I was angry with the people that I used to look up to. I was angry with my mom and dad, and I said, "How in the world can you dare teach me something that's not in the Bible?" But Ken, in his very calm manner, and Cy would be proud of this because he says, "First of all, Dave, you saved. How did it happen? Tell me about it." And I went through my story. And then we went through the videos and we went through the Bible, and something didn't line up. It was all wrong. There was something wrong. I couldn't. But Ken would sit there, and every time I asked a question, he would say, "I don't know, let's go look it up in the Bible. Let's go check it and see if that's in the concordance, and I think it's in so-and-so." But I look back on that now, and he knew exactly where it was at. But because of his humility, his coming down to my level, he showed me how to study the Bible. He showed me, don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to, he could have said, "Oh yeah, it's in Galatians 3 and verse 27 there, and then you go on over here to Romans chapter 6 and blah, blah, blah," and could have crammed it down my throat. And I could have shut down. He came to my level. He became weak because I was weak. I know that he knew exactly what he was doing. But by doing this, he did help me to study. I also believe that becoming all things to all men is something that we all need to do. How do we do that? Well, we talked about Ezra chapter 7 and verse 10. Ezra chapter 7 and verse 10 is we studied this with Lauren, and this is about a prophet. And it says this, it says, "For Ezra had set in his heart to study the law of the Lord and to do it and to teach his statutes and rules in Israel." We've got three things that we have total control over. We've got our mind, our intellect. We have our emotions, our feelings. And we've got our actions or our behaviors. We've got total control of those things, and we need to use all three of them all the time. There's many times where people get into the jail setting type setup, and maybe they forgot to put the thinking cap on, and they just went right straight from the emotion, anger, to the behavior, hitting somebody. God gave us all three, and we have total control over all of them. And when he talks about this verse right here, it says that Ezra had set in his heart. Right here. Where do we feel? Where do we get emotion from? He set in his heart, he made it personal, to study the law of the Lord. Put it up here. Make use of it. Make memory of it so that you can use it later. And to do it. His behavior and his action resulted in teaching God's statutes to Israel. Now, we have that same attributes about us. God blessed us, each and every one, with these things. But the thing is that so does everybody else that maybe we're trying to teach. We've got to gently move them along in order to be able to project the gospel in a way that is palatable to them, not bend it. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that we're not going to cram it down their throat too. We have to be able to do whatever it takes in order for them to understand and to feel, and then hopefully the action is to obey. We want all men to come to know the power of God through the gospel. And we've got many examples of this. I thought Roger was going to take my thing away from me here in Acts chapter, we're going to start off with Acts chapter 2. And here is Peter giving the very first gospel sermon. And he is bringing out this message. Did he tell them exactly what they wanted to hear? Nope. Told them what they needed to hear. And as a result of it, they were cut to the heart. As a result of it, they asked the question in verse number 38, what shall we do? They brought the message in a clear and distinct way. Didn't gloss it over, made sure that it was the truth. People heard it, they got the message. There's many times where we're going to tell somebody something they're not going to like really well. And you got to remember that these people, remember the three things we got total control over. Part of their belief is that, you know what, I may be saved. And we got to gently remove that from them and put in the truth. And so Peter gave them exactly what they needed to do, gave them exact instructions, and they were upset about it. They were cut to the heart. They weren't happy, but I'm sure that they were happy to know what the good news is now, just like I was. In Acts chapter 3, Peter and John, they're going to the temple there, and here's this invalid. I thought Roger was going to take this part of my lesson away. But the thing is that I like to look at the part of it from the invalid's point of view. This invalid probably was in a different part of town earlier, and he probably maybe didn't have so much fortune in order to get what he needed there. And most of the time, beggars had a little bag or a satchel on them, and they, in order to carry what little they may have gotten through their begging, but this particular one probably had a dry piece of old stale bread. And he was getting ready for his friends to pick him up and take him to the gate beautiful, but maybe he was chewing on this piece of bread, and just like he'd done before, just to maybe calm down the worst of the hunger pains. And his friends come and pick him up, and they're carting him along there, and says, "Well, old man, I suppose you want to go to that gate beautiful." "Yeah, I do. You know I do. Besides that, you know I'm not an old man. I'm only but a little over 30 years old. But if you'd seen life from my aspect, from 3.5 feet off the ground, you might look this way too." So they get to the gate beautiful, just in time for the ninth hour of prayer. And they're going along, and maybe he's arranging his legs in such a way that it will draw the most sympathy. He's setting himself up so maybe that will just draw just a little bit more money that he's trying to get so he can eat. And here come John and Peter, and he's "Please give me something to, money or alms or something." And I can only imagine when they go, "Well, silver and gold have we none." "Okay, well, where's somebody else?" "Look at us," they said. He says, "What I do have, get up and walk. In the name of Jesus Christ, get up and walk." Do you think that that's what that guy planned on hearing? Do you think that that was the, he was wanting money. He was wanting food. He was wanting something, but he didn't get that, did he? He got the message that he needed to hear. And boy, did it change his life. I couldn't only imagine that how long does it take a baby to start to walk? A couple, 3 months, right? Takes a little bit of while. This man was leaping. As he reached down and grabbed his hand, he was leaping. I can only imagine it was like a I don't know what, some kind of toy or something. But here, what did that man feel? Did he feel his bones grow strong? Did he feel the muscles on his legs grow all of a sudden to where he can leap? Is that what he wanted to hear when he was sat down at that gate, beautiful? No, he got what he needed. And it says that they clung to him. Jesus. Matthew 18, Mark 10, Luke 18, talking about a rich man. Rich man comes up to him and says, Lord, what do I need to get into the kingdom of heaven? He says, well, you need to not lie, don't cheat, don't commit adultery, don't steal. But Lord, I've done all these things. What do I lack? He says, go and sell all that you have and give to the poor and come and follow me. This is a sad case because he did not pick up the cross. He did not want to listen. He did not want to do what Jesus wanted him to do. And he went away sad. Did he hear what he wanted to hear? No. Did he hear the truth? Yeah. Not all men are going to do all the same thing. But I only say that to say that in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, this is Paul. He is basically giving us an idea that, you know, he's an apostle. He has seen Jesus face to face. He was given a great mission, a great task. And he's saying, you know what? I may deserve some of these things, but I'm not going to take them. I'm not going to go and do these things. And so we look at this chapter, and it's talking about his self-sacrifice. And I'm not going to try to step on Tony's toes, sorry. We've been doing that all weekend long. But he's talking about self-sacrifice. He's talking about that he was given a mission, he was given this apostleship, and he is willing to sacrifice it all in order to save souls. What did we or most people do in this world, especially in our world of sin? Now, being a prison minister, I get to hear some pretty raunchy stories. I'll ask the guys things like, what did you sacrifice to your God of your drug of choice? Your liquor or your heroin or your meth or whatever it is. Oh, no, well, we didn't do much, you know. Well, let's think about that here for a second. First of all, you're sitting in jail. What's the first thing you gave up? Your freedom. What's the other thing you gave up? Well, I can't spend time with my family. Like, yeah, you gave up your family. How about your job? You got your job? No, well, I lost my job. Got your house still? No, we had to move out of that. How about your car? You got your car still? No, they repossessed that. So tell me, how much did you sacrifice to this God of your choice, this God of the world that you so faithfully followed? Oh, I didn't faithfully. No, you faithfully followed this God. Because look what you sacrificed to this God. Now, are you willing to sacrifice as much or more to God in heaven? And we could look at our own lives and do the same thing. How many hours do you work? How many baseball or hockey or softball games do you go to? How many hours do we spend in front of the TV? And tell me, what's your sacrifice into your God? Little g or big G? What are we sacrificing to him? Are we doing all things to do what it takes to spread the gospel into the world that does not know this God? What are we willing to sacrifice? Are we willing to sacrifice everything that it takes, like Paul was doing, this self-sacrifice? Well, I don't like using me as an example, but it's the only one that I know real well. But the thing is that one of the things that blew me away is that when the elders hired me at the Anchorage Church of Christ, Mansell, I've been doing the prison ministry for, oh, probably since 98, I think it was. And I've been, love it. Did that very first jail class, fell in love. You couldn't keep me out of jail. And that's a hard thing to say. When I was a kid, when I was arrested, you couldn't keep me, I didn't want to be there. Now, I love being there. But the thing is that the elders said, they fully endorsed the prison ministry, and I'm grateful as I'll get out for James goes in with me now, and Mike is going in my classes now, and there are so many others that we got, 32, 35 people that are got volunteer cards that go into the jails now. And I am really grateful for that. But the thing is that when they hired me, they came up to me in 2004 and they said, Dave, we don't want you doing any more than what you're doing, but we're going to give you a part-time salary. Whoa, cool. I like that. I had a pretty successful construction business at the time. And so I'm kind of 110% guy. You give me a dollar and I'm going to give you a $1.20 change. And so I started some more classes. What is it, 3 years later, 2007, came to me again and says, Dave, don't want you doing any more what you're doing. We're going to pay you full-time salary. What was it, 3-4 months later, I shut my business down? I did it full-time. God put a burning desire in my heart, and I loved it. I loved doing the work of God. Now, I'll be real honest with you. As I was sitting over there waiting to come up here, I cannot tell you how I wish at least the first three rows were all in yellows. It would have made me feel a whole lot more comfortable. But I probably couldn't talk you into that, could I? But the thing is that whatever it takes, and the reason I bring that up is because we've got almost 300 people in our congregation, 350. And I have got 31 volunteers that's got cards, and half of those don't go into jail with me. It's a tough sell. It's real hard to have somebody come up and hear that clang of the door, a real heavy iron door come up behind you and slam and know that, well, it's not going to unlock unless somebody really unlocks it for you. And then you go into a closed room with, well, I can have up to 50 inmates at one of the facilities. I can only have 20 at another one. But to be locked in a room with 50 inmates, it's pretty intimidating. But guess what? Through the strength of God, He's given me this big mouth. He tells me that, okay, I want you to go preach this message. And thanks be to God, we talk to over 100 to 150 guys every week in open Bible study to talk about the gospel. And God has blessed the Anchorage congregation because we have now almost 31 offenders that worship with us. Now, some of them have gone back to jail. Some of them have fallen away. But they obeyed, and I pray that that seed takes hold again. And I mean, I see them all the time. Unfortunately, it's when they get rolled back up or something like that. And I don't like using me as an example, but you got to do whatever it takes. You got to stand up and say, Lord, here I am, send me. Believe, if you believe, get up and talk about it. Now, I know that each and every one of you got a neighbor, you got a coworker, you got all these different people that you talk to each and every day, we sit there and say, well, Lord, please send them to me. You probably just need to open your eyes. You probably just reach around and touch somebody that you can talk to. Maybe you're talking to them already and you don't even know it. Maybe they're going along and saying, you know, that one doesn't cuss and doesn't drink, and wow, they're busy every Sunday. Maybe you're speaking volumes just doing that alone, and hallelujah. But we got a job. Paul, we read in what Roger was talking about in 2 Corinthians, I believe it was chapter 11 there, and all the hardships that Paul was going through. And yet he is still the one that sits there and says, here am I am the worst of the sinners. We're all in this boat. For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And I'm grateful to God to each and every one of you as brothers, people that I have worked with and talked with and fellowshipped with and thrown snowballs at with, huh, Kevin? That you are my brothers and sisters. And I am honored to be able to be part of this family and called one of God's elect. Is that weak? No. I am a saint. I am a messenger. I am a deliverer of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I'm proud of that. And I want everybody to know it. And we just need to take this courage. We believe in the greatest thing there is in this world, the greatest message there is in this world, the greatest gift there is in this world, and let's not hide it. Let's not hide it under this bushel over here. Let's not, let's not be prejudgmental and say, well, you know, he's never going to obey. Don't pay any attention to him. Because I'm glad somebody paid attention to me. And I know that you're grateful for the one that sat down and says, here is the truth. This is what you need to do. It's up to you. Remember that thing we got three total choices over? Mind, intellect, our heart, our feelings, and our behavior, our actions. We can use all three of them. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and body. Heart, intellect, or your emotion. Mind, intellect, body, your soul, your everything that's about you. And love your neighbor as yourself. We believe, therefore we speak. Let's take this great message. Let's take this great gift and give it to everybody that we need to. Everybody that needs it. Everybody needs it. Over, ain't I? I'm honored to be here with you. Marianne and I are short timers here. We're going to be leaving for North Carolina in October of this year. And Alaska is all I have ever known. To be honest with you, I'm scared to death. But you know what? I've got great confidence because there's a church down there that's great. There's Christians all around the world because of people like us being able to take it to the rest of the world. People like the radio station that is broadcasting to 92% of the world. People that are not afraid to stand up and say, I am a Christian, you be one too. Let's rock and roll. Thank you.